Hello, everyone, and welcome to Our Stories, lively and direct from the production studios at community radio station KHMB, 100.9 FM and 1710 AM. This podcast is a collection of news stories from CoastSideNews.com, publishers of the Half Moon Bay Review and Pacifica Tribune. This podcast is a collaboration between the nonprofit Coastal Literary Arts Movement, CoastSide News, and KHMB Radio. I'm David Gorn. The idea when we launched this podcast called Our Stories is to go a little deeper into the stories that matter to people on the coastside. And today we have two good ones. The first one up is a success story, a feel-good story, kind of an amazing story, but one that started in the worst way possible for Half Moon Bay.
ABC 10 is on the scene of the shooting in Half Moon Bay where the violence played out at two different locations.
That's right. I'm at Mountain Mushroom Farm. You can see right behind me, it's still a very active scene. The sheriff deputies are crowding this area as the crime tape is...
All of that breathless reporting has now subsided a bit after 2 years. But for a long time, if you Googled Half Moon Bay, you'd get the mushroom farm killings.
The oceanside town of Half Moon Bay, now another on the list of cities impacted by mass shootings in California after a 67-year-old gunman shot and killed.
So when TV camera crews came to film the sites of those shootings, they also filmed the squalid living quarters of the workers there. And that, in part, prompted a wave of county inspections and closures of that substandard housing. Now, a little over 2 years later, those workers and their families, traumatized by both the killings and by being removed from where they lived, are about to have a new place to live, a better place to live.
Right now, I can see they're drilling into the land, and on my right, you can see that there are, two or three crews paving where a house might be.
I'm standing on a construction site with Sebastian Mignobuccelli. He's a reporter for CoastSideNews.com, and he's showing me around the housing development being constructed at the end of the road past Stone Pine Center and past the Half Moon Bay Post Office.
We have 20 cars here, trucks, different types of construction trucks here. They're paving the road over there. There's a lot at play right now, and they're working hard to get it done. It looks like it's ready to go very soon.
And now I'm back in studio with Sebastian Mignobuccelli to talk about what we saw out at Stone Pine Cove.
I can remember when I went out to visit the site in December, and we had just had a big rain. There was mud and debris everywhere. The whole thing looked like a big sloppy mess of a field. That was just 4 months ago. And when we went to see the property together, it was stunning to see such a change.
Well, so I have a lot of questions for you, but can you just start by briefing me on what happened to all those families over the past 2 years? Where have they lived?
The first night, they stayed at the IDS Hall that was arranged by the city and so many nonprofit groups, Coastside Hope, ALAS, many others. Then they lived in hotels for a week. The county paid for that. But many of these families, they had never been in a hotel before. According to city officials, some of them didn't know you were allowed to use the soap.
So, but what about these last 2 years? That's a long time to be without housing.
The first year, they were placed in various types of housing, and the county paid for it. The second year, the city took over the financing, along with a number of other philanthropic individuals and groups, and kept them in that housing. The money was due to run out next month, but recently, the city council voted to extend it till the summer.
Well, what happens after the summer?
Summer is move-in time. The county has already started accepting applications for buying these homes. Move-in is expected to start sometime in the summer.
That's so fast. 2 years from idea to actuality. That is rare speed in the world of government projects.
Like I said, I had my doubts. Just 4 months ago, it definitely didn't look like a small neighborhood of farm worker housing. But here we are.
Okay, now the pushback on this development, I know, has been, hey, why just farm workers? Why not service workers or teachers or seniors or anyone with a lower income?
That's an interesting argument. But the city was presented with a huge problem. Many families were displaced after the shootings, traumatized, and with nowhere to go. This project was initially a response to that, and it's impressive that it will be able to be done so quickly.
And just so people understand, what's the criteria for moving into one of these 46 homes?
Obviously, priority goes to the 19 families displaced by the 2023 shootings. After that, you need to be a farm worker earning less than 60% of the median income in the county. You have to currently work in agriculture in San Mateo County, and you have to currently live in the county. Oh, and you also have to be a first-time home buyer.
Okay. And again, just to be clear, they're buying these homes over a long period of time, yes?
The county is offering a 20-year zero-interest loan, forgivable when the full cost of the unit is paid. On top of that, they'll need to pay rent on the space, which is owned by the city.
Okay, not to be crass here, but could this somehow be turned into a money-making enterprise?
It's really just about having a home. If a farm worker does want to sell their home, there are some limits on the equity that they can earn, partly because the city and county want to keep the house affordable for the next first-time home buyer.
Yeah, anything else you need to tell me about this story?
Well, I can't help but think about what a change this is going to be for these families.
Oh, and you don't mean just because of the shootings?
Outside of the families affected by the shootings, this is a first for other farm workers as well. Many of them don't want to live in worker housing owned by the farm. They would love to live close to their friends, their church, a store, and they would be ecstatic to be able to have their own home.
Everyone has focused on the 19 displaced families, but this is a big step for farm workers in Half Moon Bay.
And to be helped by the community like this, seeing all of the work by the city and nonprofits, it was remarkable, really.
Thank you, Sebastian. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Well, okay, enough of the heartstrings, right? We need to move on to story number two today. And it has a very different bent. Today I want to talk about how our two biggest coastside cities, Half Moon Bay and Pacifica, are selling themselves. What they're doing to make everyone want to spend their tourist dollars here. So with me is Catherine Wheeler, reporter for Coastside News. Hey, Catherine, I know you and fellow reporter Ashton Hackey recently wrote about some big shifts in how Pacifica wants to help businesses and attract people with disposable income. What is that about?
Hi there. So there are two things going on like that in Pacifica. The first one about a tourism marketing district can seem a little complicated.
Okay. Can we start with the second one then?
Yes, sure. So as my colleague Ashton Hackey reported, there has been some frustration among business owners who feel their particular businesses aren't getting enough of a push. Pacifica isn't really a centralized city. There are four areas that all have collections of stores and businesses. Rather than a single downtown, it's more like a string of downtowns, like a necklace of neighborhoods down the coast.
So am I getting this right? If you're a business in one of those clusters and advertising money is spent trying to promote all the businesses in Pacifica, those advertising dollars get spread a little thin.
Right. So some business owners are forming smaller neighborhood groups to try to raise the profile of their specific area. They think they'll get more return on advertising investment that way.
That's interesting. And so the other idea, the first one, the complicated one, I'm not going to understand.
Pacifica already has a tourism marketing district, but it's considering a new approach to it. The city may decide to put the money from that marketing district into the hands of a nonprofit.
Well, before we get into why a nonprofit might be better, can you tell me where that marketing money comes from?
Yeah, so the city charges a dollar for all hotel stays and short-term rentals and then pools that money into a fund.
$1 for a hotel stay? That's four quarters. That's 10 dimes. That can't amount to much, can it?
Well, it's estimated to bring in $125,000 a year.
Ooh, okay then. That's a lot of dimes.
Yes. The nonprofit turns around and invests that money in pushing Pacifica as a tourist and meeting destination across the Bay Area.
So explain to me, how is that different from what they're doing now?
Well, it's more of an image-based campaign, how to position Pacifica in the minds of tourists, convention planners, and event planners, with an eye on boosting hotel business.
So it's kind of a different ad campaign.
It's a model that's being used more often in California. There are about 115 tourism improvement districts in the state. Stockton is one of them. It started a campaign to promote their city as stocked full of flavor. Monterey did it too. They came up with inspired moments in meetings.
Inspired moments in meetings. I know I'm not supposed to judge here, but seriously, isn't that an oxymoron?
Pacifica hasn't decided exactly what it's going to emphasize yet, if the new district is given the green light by city council.
Okay, so that's different from what Half Moon Bay is trying, but it's similar in that both cities are trying to do something splashy to promote tourism.
Yes, this is the piece Ashton wrote, but it's not exactly to bring more tourists in. It's more to direct them to the downtown area and to make them feel like they've arrived in a really cool place.
Explain, please. I don't know what you're talking about.
Half Moon Bay is talking about having a new look as you enter town along Highway 92. It's more like a gateway.
Oh, right. So I know right now when you drive in on 92, you have the cemetery on your right, you have the gas station on your left.
Right, and a small sign that points to the downtown historic district shops. Half Moon Bay wants a giant gateway to go across the entire intersection there, welcoming people to the city and letting them know that if you want Main Street shopping and Main Street charm, you need to turn left. There are other iterations and proposals of the design with smaller, more numerous signs, too.
You know, I've talked to so many people who come to Half Moon Bay, and they don't even know we have a downtown area. I swear that's true. I think signage at that spot would really help.
Yes. The holdup now is logistical. How to accomplish that at such a wide intersection. And the designers also want to alert people about the upcoming left turn to downtown before they approach that intersection. So it's challenging to figure out how and where to do that.
Well, and I bet I know the other holdup. Cash dollars.
City officials estimate getting the project to that point where actual construction could start could cost more than $200,000.
Okay, so $200K, that's just the money you need to plan the whole thing. After that, is it a lot more?
Once they get to that point, city planners say they have an anonymous donor who wants to help chip in for the actual construction costs if a design can be approved.
So do we have a timeline for all that?
Nothing definitive on completion. It's still so early in the planning process. There will be many months of public meetings and commission hearings before a design is finalized.
And so what's the general feeling? Is this something that's going to get done, do you think?
Well, that's not my call, obviously, but it was interesting what Crystalline Geet had to say at the end of Ashton's story. She heads the chamber and has been attending the discussions at architectural advisory committee meetings. She had an interesting take on it. She said, even if it takes 5 years to get done and it results in making the city more prosperous for 30 years, then that would be worth the effort.
Well, thank you, Catherine, for your solid reporting.
Thank you very much.
And also big thanks to Sebastian Mignobuccelli for his reporting on Stone Pine Cove. While thanking everyone, I need to say our engineer today is Jay Michaels. Our music was written by Adam Rossi and Michael Fiorentino. Thanks to KHMB and to the man with the golden pipe, station manager Jim Henderson. Thanks to CoastSideNews.com and its editors, Peter Tukofsky and M. Spade. Thanks to the nonprofit Coastal Literary Arts Movement for the seed money and for lending us board member Peter Finch. And also a quick thank you to city manager Matthew Chittister, city engineer Marco Virginia, and special thanks to the irascible and lovable Craig Karen, foreman for Interstate Grading and Construction, the Stone Pine Cove contractor. And mostly thanks to you for listening and for wanting to be involved in what's happening on the coast side. We'll do it again in 2 weeks, Wednesday at 6 p.m. I'm David Gorman.